This episode of the Nightlight Stories podcast is sponsored by Bags by Betty. Betty has been sewing things ever since she was a little girl. She loves designing and making handbags, purses, table runners, children's clothes, embroidery, and much, much more. Basically, when it comes to sewing and stitching, Betty is the best. Her creations are beautifully unique works of art that have a practical purpose. Browse her online store at bit.ly/bagsbybetty to see samples of all her fabulous creations. That's bit.ly/bagsbybetty. Like her Facebook page at facebook.com/bagsbybetty54 to see what people are saying about her beautiful works of art. Buy a bag from Betty today. Hello, and welcome to episode 62 of the Nightlight Stories podcast, recorded on April 14th, 2014. This podcast shares one original story each episode that will light up the imaginations of children of all ages, anytime, anywhere. I'm your host and narrator, Miss Mel.
Oh my goodness, Miss Mel. This is the final chapter of the Terrapenny Ornata stories, so to speak.
What do you mean, Mr. Kress?
I mean this part, part three, tells us what happens next to Haver on his quest to find all 21 of Baba Tucci's hidden geocaches.
But this isn't the final chapter, is it, Mr. Kress?
Well, no. For the last few episodes, we've been saying that the Pagona Viticep storyline and the Terrapenny Ornata storyline intersect somehow. That means there's definitely more story to come. We've got to get back to Vivian and find out what's happened to her.
Speaking of Vivian, we invited our real-life friend, who also has the name Vivian, to record a recap of the story so far for us. Take it away, Viv!
Haver Hawkins set a goal for himself. During the summer before his fifth grade school year, he was determined to be the first person to find all the caches hidden by expert geocacher Baba Tucci. Haver discovered the first of Baba Tucci's caches embedded within a tree. The cache contained a small scroll indicating it was the 11th of 21. Below the message was a quick response code. Haver scanned the code with his handheld device, taking him deeper into the mystery.
As you listen to this story, consider the following. What's the biggest mystery you've ever solved? Terrapenny Ornata, Part 3, by Chris and Melissa Bouguet. Haver pulled a green bandana out of his pocket and wiped the sweat from his brow. He was so close. The treasure was within 200 feet, if he could just find it. His mother sat on a bench, licking driblets of ice cream running off the edges of his baby sister's cone. He never understood why his mother allowed her to get a cone. It always made a mess. Always. Why not just get her the ice cream in a cup instead? His mother insisted on the cone, saying getting messy was part of the fun, but Haver didn't see it that way. Sticky, gooey slop all over your lips and chin sounded gross, not fun. He'd rather stay clean and find the treasure than take a chance of getting covered in his baby sister's slobber fest. Haver liked what he liked, and although ice cream was fine, finding the treasure hidden by expert geocacher Baba Tucci was more pressing. It took him all summer to find 20 of the 21 hidden caches. His mother and baby sister accompanied him to parks, beaches, long trails into the woods, and inside public buildings, searching for almost all of Baba Tucci's treasures. Two or three times a week, they'd hunt down a cache and then stop for ice cream at whichever place was closest on the map. It was a win-win situation. Haver got to hunt for the hidden caches while his mother and baby sister sequentially sampled every flavor of ice cream in town. One by one, Haver uncovered the locations of Baba Tucci's hidden caches. One was inside a lamppost, right in the center of town. Another was hidden in a decrepit birdhouse that was probably built in the 1800s. One was tucked away in a hollowed-out piece of wood that had been spiked into the ground. Haver didn't know who Baba Tucci was, but he was excellent at hiding caches in places that required the hunter to get dirty. If it wasn't filthy terrain, it was more gloop. If it wasn't more gloop, it was hidden inside something disgusting, like the one he found at the bottom of a dumpster. Each cache tested his resolve, but Haver would not give up. His curiosity outweighed his disgust. He had to know what was at the end of this quest, even if it meant some dirt under his nails or grease in his hair. He would not give up. By the third cache, Haver discovered a pattern. Each one followed the same general design as the cache he found in the tree. There was always a key with a B forged on the end. The key was always masked somehow, either in another ball of sticky syrup, buried in a pile of mud, covered in compost, or otherwise guarded by something icky. The key was always already inserted into a lock and, when turned, revealed a hidden drawer containing a scroll. Each scroll contained a message, presumably from Baba Tucci, with a quick response code on it. The codes were linked to websites. Haver had expected a picture, maybe a map, or letters, or directions. Instead, the links led to something completely different. Scanning the QR code brought up a simple play, stop, start interface. Pressing play launched a sound file. Haver had listened to each sound, but they didn't seem to make any sense. Each sound was a recording of a single syllable or word spoken using a computerized voice. Haver listened to the files repeatedly. He listened so often that he even started to hear them in his dreams while he slept. He tried writing them down and rearranging them to see if they made a message, but with 21 sounds, some of which weren't even all whole words, he felt like the combinations of what could be produced were endless. He was sure the sounds, when placed in the correct order, would reveal the secret to the mystery, but without a clue as to how to unscramble them, Haver felt lost. He hoped the last cache, number 21, the one he was searching for in this park, would reveal the order in which he was to listen to the previous 20.
"Good luck, honey! I hope you find what you're looking for! Remember, we've got the appointment with Dr. Don the dentist in 1 hour, so don't get too messy, okay? We'll just be here and playing on the playground," his mother called to him before taking a lick off her cone. Haver smiled, told his mother he'd be back soon, and marched forward into the park. This park was called Dinosaur Park because all of the playground equipment was shaped like dinosaurs. He had swung on the swings, slid down the slides, and crawled through the tunnels of the park hundreds of times. How long had the last hidden cache been here? Had it been here the entire time, hidden in plain sight, like many of the other caches? Had he, in fact, seen it before and just never realized what he was looking at? Lost in his memories and walking away, Haver barely registered the question his sister asked his mother.
"Mama, I love chocolate chip. Wasn't this the first flavor of ice cream we had this summer?"
"I don't remember, darling. Maybe." Haver, however, did remember. How could he forget the brown slobber plastered all over his sister's face? After eating the chocolate chip, she had looked like she had stuck her face in a mud puddle. The memory sparked a thought. Chocolate chip was the first flavor his sister had tried. What was the second? He tried to remember, but fell short. He shook the question away. It didn't matter. What did matter was the next idea that popped into his head. He had, of course, tried listening to the sounds in numerical order, but that just resulted in a mishmash. What he hadn't tried was listening to the sounds in the order of acquisition. But how could that be possible? He found the caches randomly, didn't he? Haver flipped through the geocaching app to locate the dates on which he found each one. Then he copied the dates into a mind-mapping app, giving each date its own cell. He slid the cells around to place the dates in chronological order. Using the ordered list for reference, he flipped back to the saved audio file and listened. 1.
Go.
2.
3. A.
4.
Place.
5.
At.
6.
39D.
7.
2M.
8.
20 S.
9.
And.
10.
Negative.
11.
77 D.
12.
29 M.
13.
36 S.
14.
2.
15.
Fine.
16.
A.
17.
Terra.
18.
Penny.
19.
R.
20.
Na.
His fingers tapped the keyboard as he entered each sound into its corresponding cell in the mind map. Then he read the string aloud. Go to a place at 39 degrees, 2 minutes, 20 seconds, and negative 77 degrees, 29 minutes, 36 seconds to find Terrapene Orna. According to the geocaching app, that's exactly where he was. He was standing in the park at those coordinates. That just meant he had to find Terrapene Orna, whatever that was. Haver launched his internet browser and began thumbing Terrapene Orna into the search window. Like every search, the engine attempted to predict what he was typing. A list appeared matching the typed letters. By the time he had finished Terrapene, the search had completed the next word. Ornata. There wasn't anything called a Terrapene Orna, but there was something called a Terrapene Ornata. Ta must be the sound file hidden in cache 21, Haver speculated to himself. Terrapene Ornata? What was a Terrapene Ornata? Haver pressed the search button, and a grid of images filled the screen. A turtle? Haver said, almost laughing. You're kidding me! All this time the big mystery has been a turtle? Haver's shoulders dropped. He wasn't sure what he was expecting. A pile of gold? Gems? Jewels? Maybe some sort of special gadget or gizmo that would help him become an even better geographer or cartographer. What he wasn't expecting, as a result of all his long hours of searching through grungy, dirty, disgusting, filthy hiding spots, was a turtle. Unless that turtle turned out to eat pizza, ride a skateboard, and wear a ninja mask, it was probably going to be pretty boring. A slow-moving reptile wasn't exactly his idea of an exciting prize. Disappointment hitched a ride on his back. It was a heavy weight to bear. Part of him wanted to give up, just go home, and climb back onto the internet. Heck! He could look at pictures of every species of turtle on a dozen different sites if he wanted. He didn't need to find one in the wild. In fact, this entire adventure seemed like a waste of time. He had spent the whole summer hunting for keys to open locks for what? Nothing. Sure, he had done some things he never thought himself capable of. Before this summer, he never would have crawled through that log in the woods to find the cache hidden inside. He would have never dug deep into wet, gritty sand at the lakefront beach to uncover a buried key. And he certainly would have never stepped into a lake, his bare feet squelching around in the muck, to find the cache hidden inside a sunken chest. This summer had been full of challenges. Despite his initial reservations, Haver faced down his fears. Driven by curiosity, he conquered each obstacle, discovering an inner bravery he didn't know he possessed. It had been gross, true. It had been hard, true. But it also felt good, really good, that he had done it. He had stuck with it. Not only had he tracked down all the caches, but he had unraveled a mystery no one else had been able to solve. It's not time to give up now. I might as well see it through to the end. Haver swiped his thumb across the screen, flipping open the hint on the last of Baba Tucci's hidden caches. Holy moly! For a rookie or a first-timer, this clue might have been tricky. Haver was no rookie. After looking for and finding 20 of Baba Tucci's caches, he was a seasoned veteran. This clue was a piece of cake. Moles were animals that made tunnels in the ground. The clue, holy moly, meant he should be looking for a hole in the ground. Haver's keen eyes swept the landscape. The park had a playground, the floor of which was covered with black tire chips. The hole wouldn't be in the playground. The entire park was surrounded by trees, whose thick leaves canopied the sky, making for natural shade over the equipment. A bike path circled the perimeter of the playground in between the tire mulch and tree line. One branch of the path led off deeper into a wooded area. Haver checked the compass on his app, and as he suspected, it pointed in the direction of the path. He followed it a few hundred feet, watching the distance on the app grow smaller and smaller until it reached zero. Haver looked up to find that he was standing on the bike path just before a small wooden bridge that traversed a creek. The bridge wasn't large, only wide enough for two bicycles to pass each other if necessary. The creek it crossed wasn't deep at all. He could clearly see the bottom through the gently rolling water. Haver looked on the ground on either side of the bike path. There were no holes that he could see. The app told him that he was 5 feet away from the hiding spot, with the direction arrow pointing straight ahead. It can't be, Haver thought to himself. He stepped onto the bridge, knelt down, and peered between two boards on the floor of the bridge. I should have known, Haver said, shaking his head. Of course it would be down there. He slid his device into the back pocket of his shorts, bent down, and untied his sneakers. He peeled his socks from his feet. They stunk. He slid his backpack off his shoulders, put his socks and shoes inside, and walked toward the bridge. His body rejected the idea of stepping into the mud. Like a magnet repelling its opposing charge, Haver's foot hovered over the bank. He willed it into the silt. The mud was cold. The ick squished around his toes. It wasn't the first time he had to do this, but that didn't make it any easier. His body rejected the idea of getting dirty again, but his mind, driven by his will to finish what he started, won out. He stepped deeper into the mud, keeping one hand on the bridge for support. It took him 5 more steps to make it to far enough away from the edge to where he could duck under the bridge without crawling and without the backpack scraping the bottom. His feet sunk in 1/2 inch deeper, grime clinging to his toes, but he could move easily. He had feared it would be so loose that he'd sink right into his ankles. He remembered Johnny Hornberger, a student in his class last year, bragging about how he had got new sneakers because he lost his old pair in a sinkhole. Haver didn't want to have to explain to his mother how he lost a shoe. He stooped low, bending at the waist, and ducked under the bridge. It was dark underneath, but enough light came from the sides and from between the cracks in the boards that Haver could see clearly. There, centered in the bank, was the hole. The opening of the hole was about the size of Haver's fist. Claw marks made gouges along the floor where something had dug its way inside. Could a turtle have made such marks? Clumps of partially dried mud edged the entrance. Haver concluded that these mounds were from something burrowing its way inside the hole, making a sort of tunnel. He also knew, without a doubt, that the cache lay inside. He looked around for something long that he could stick into the hole. A fallen tree branch was stuck in some rocks in the stream. He scuttled over and plucked it out of the water. Then, without hesitation, he poked it into the hole. About 1.5 feet in, it hit something. Was it the cache, a rock, or just more mud? There was no way to tell. Haver retracted the stick and pulled out his device. He flicked on the light that doubled as a flash for taking pictures. He shined it into the hole and peered inside. The light penetrated a few inches, but it didn't go deep enough for him to see what he had hit. There were only two options. First, he could spend the afternoon digging. The soil was wet on top, but he still guessed it might take him some time to dig far enough to reach whatever was down there, if there was anything down there at all. He didn't have that much time before he needed to be back to his mother. He didn't think she'd appreciate him coming back, looking like he had lost a wrestling match with a warthog. The second option made Haver shiver, but it was the only other thing to do. He was going to have to stick his arm in that hole. Haver knelt down, careful not to let his shorts touch the mud. Leaning forward, he slowly placed his left hand into the mouth of the hole. Inch by inch, he stretched deeper inside. Was the supposed turtle home buried inside its warren? If so, would Haver's hand invading its space startle the poor creature? If that happened, would it lash out, biting his fingers? What if the turtle wasn't there? What if a snake or spider had come in and laid claim to the tunnel as its lair? Haver felt a pang of fear jump on the trampoline in his stomach. He expected something to snap at his fingers at any moment, but he did not stop pushing further into the abyss. When he was shoulder deep and starting to fear he wouldn't be able to reach the end of the tunnel, his fingers brushed against something distinctly metallic. "The key," Haver whispered. "I've got it." He pushed deeper, stretching and straining his muscles to get a grip on what he hoped to be the key. The final key. The sleeve of his collared shirt pressed into the mud. His mom would be furious, but he was too far in to quit now. He pinched the object between his finger and thumb. It was the key. He felt the telltale shape of the molded bee on the head. He turned it and heard the familiar click of the internal tumblers falling into place. Then he pulled it, beginning to extract the key and the attached drawer he knew he'd find. Haver felt it right away. Something was different. The drawer resisted, like it was stuck on something. No, stuck wasn't exactly right. It was lodged in the mud or wedged in grime. It was coming out, but Haver felt a gentle tension pulling back. Haver applied more force, careful not to yank or jerk. He didn't want to lose his grip or somehow ruin the contents in the container. The resistance on the other end of the drawer was ever present, like he was stretching a giant rubber band. It wasn't anything he couldn't manage, but it was different than the previous caches. After what seemed like an eternity, his hand, the key, and the object attached to the key emerged. All of the other caches contained a small drawer with a piece of parchment inside. Some had been bigger, smaller, rounder, or flatter, based on where they were hidden. They all, however, were rectangular in shape, with the key acting as the knob. This drawer, however, was different. It was shaped like a turtle. It was rusty and old, covered in patches of mud. The key made up the tail. The shell was a brownish-green metal, like copper. There appeared to be a seam running vertically, bisecting the shell into two equal halves. Two eyes, shaped like tiny gears, adorned either side of the head. Its mouth was open, and Haver instantly saw what was causing the resistance. A chain was jutting out from inside the turtle's mouth. Like the rest of the prize, the chain was a murky rust, and it trailed back into the hole. Haver wondered if all the other caches had chains, too. He wasn't sure. For most of the previous caches, he pulled the drawer out, took out the parchment, and put the drawer back. This was the first cache he had found where he actually had to extract the entire drawer, and it was certainly the first one shaped like a turtle. What could the other end of the chain be attached to? Holding the cache in his left hand, Haver gingerly twisted the key again until he heard it click. The shell of the turtle split down the middle, opening at the seam. Fragments of the shell folded in under themselves, like a stadium dome retracting. Haver was reminded of some of his toys that transformed from robots to car and back again. Within seconds, the movement stopped, and like he expected, the piece of parchment lay inside. With nimble fingers, he plucked it from its container. In one sudden and violent stroke, the mouth of the turtle bit down. The chain snapped. Haver, straining in the opposite direction, flew backward and flopped onto his backside with a splurch. The chain whizzed in the air and disappeared down the hole, producing a low whine like fishing line being wound around a reel. Haver heard gears, ancient and rusty, grind together from somewhere underneath him. Then it stopped, and a loud pop echoed from the hole. Haver scrambled back to a crouch. Mud dripped from his shorts, shirt, and backpack. Big black splotches covered his arms, face, and hair. In his right hand, he clutched the metal turtle. In his left, miraculously, perhaps even on instinct, his hand had closed around the parchment, keeping it secure and preserved. He unfurled it with two clean fingers, careful not to get it messy. With no surprise, he confirmed what he suspected. Written inside was the same message as all the rest, with a corresponding QR code. Haver reached to grab his device from his back pocket to confirm that, first, it's still working after landing directly on it when he hit the mud, and second, that the code indeed led to the sound of ta. His fingers had just grazed the device's cover when he heard the sound of rushing water, like that of a giant flood, coming from behind him. Haver spun to see the water in the creek spread and fall away as something large emerged. It was massive, spanning the width of the creek. A mixture of rocks, slime, clay, sticks, and other debris from the creek bed fell away as the object rose up out of the water on four large legs. The legs were attached to a center oval, two nearest the side facing Haver and two near the back. Between the front two legs was a hole, black and deep. When it was completely out of the water, it stopped, coming to a rest inches from the top of the bridge. It took a moment for Haver to register what he was seeing. It was bronze, or maybe gold. The metal looked new, unrusted, almost shiny despite having just come from the bottom of the stream. There was no mistaking what it was, however. It was the body and shell of a giant metal headless turtle. Haver, captivated, leaned in closer. He squinted, peering inside between the legs where the head should have been, hoping to get a clue as to what this strange object could be. Suddenly, a jet of water sprayed from the blackness. The blast soaked him from head to toe. Haver threw his hand up to cover his face, but it wasn't a great defense to stop the onrush of water. When the gush faded to just a trickle, Haver blinked his eyes open. The hole was gone. In its place was a giant metal head, with larger gears, like the sprockets of a clock on each side as eyes. Haver recognized the creature instantly. It was a much larger version of the tiny turtle he held in his hand. Terrapini or Nada wasn't a live turtle, but a statue of a turtle. Was it made of pure gold? Was he rich? How would he get it home? He'd have to tell his mother about this magnificent find. This wouldn't just change his life. It would change the lives of his mother and baby sister as well. Wait a second, Haver. Don't get ahead of yourself, an inner voice told him. You've rushed through things before. Let's think this one through. Make sure it is gold before you jump to wild conclusions. Haver shoved the mini turtle into his backpack, along with a piece of parchment. He brought out his device and snapped a picture. Relieved that it still worked, he moved around the giant statue, walking into the stream, taking pictures as he went. He wanted to capture this magnificent creature from all angles. He moved across the creek, careful not to smack his head on the top of the bridge. Once he circled all the way around, he slid the device into his pocket. How am I going to tell if this is gold or not? He asked himself. Absent-mindedly, he reached forward and touched the turtle. It vibrated. He jumped back, startled. It shook, sending ripples through the water that flowed around its legs. A hissing noise emanated from all sides of the shell. Haver expected it to purge more water, but then the hissing slowed. Pop! The shell on the turtle's back split from head to tail, just like the mini version had done moments earlier. The shell folded over on itself. Unlike its little brother, however, an effervescent pink light shot from the inside upward. The glow grew brighter as each plate slid under the next. Haver's jaw hit the mud. What was this? What could be inside? The turtle itself was another cache. Just like all the other caches, there was something inside. But what could it be? Haver threw his arms around the neck of the turtle and hoisted himself up. He swung one foot over the top and straddled the neck like he was riding it backwards. He bent low, his chest down, careful not to bang his head on the bottom of the bridge. The metal was wet and slippery. He squeezed his knees together, straining to keep hold. Once he felt secure, he leaned forward and peered inside the opening once covered by the shell. He was looking down onto a giant body of water. White caps broke over the top of rolling waves. A mist hung over the surface, obscuring parts of it. But was it water? Maybe it was a trick of the sun, but it looked pink, like the lemonade his mother made. It smelled like the ocean, with a salty tinge in the air, but the color was all wrong. It sounded like the ocean, too. The waves swished back and forth, ebbing in time to some great tide. But there was another sound, too. It was a faint whirring noise. It came from the air around him. Haver gripped the edges of the shell and leaned further into the strange world. From his side, his fingertips held on to the metal edges on the outside of the turtle. His thumbs wrapped around and were inside, also touching metal. He craned his neck to look around the edges of what he was holding on to see if he could spot what was making the whirring sound. Four ropes dangled around him. They disappeared out of sight, lost into a curvature above him, making it impossible to trace them to their origin. Despite being outside on the turtle in his world, he got the distinct impression that he was inside something in the other world. Another world? Was he really seeing this? It had to be a digital projection. Was it a hologram of some sort? Was he looking at some sort of special effect, like in the movies, or some extravagant theater production? If so, it was more elaborate than he could have imagined possible. Was he imagining all this? No. He was sitting on the back of a giant turtle statue that had just risen out of a creek. This was not a trick. This was not a hallucination. This was happening. He was here. This was a portal into a world he alone had found. No, not found, unlocked. Suddenly, without warning, the shell started to close. A spike of fear shot through his body. No, you can't close, no! Questions shot through his mind like popcorn kernels in a roasting pan. When it closes, will I be able to open it again? What is this place? Should I go inside? Would that be crazy? Would I fall to my death? Am I too high to jump into the water? If I go, will I be able to get back? What about my mother and my sister? They'll be wondering where I've gone, won't they? Haver wrestled with the questions as the shell reversed its direction, closing. He tried to hold it open, but knew that it was futile. In or out. In or out. Then the turtle made the decision for him. It tilted upward, slamming into the bottom of the bridge. Its neck turned into one giant golden slide. Haver lost his grip on the slick surface and, with a look of terror etched on his face, slid inside. We hope you enjoyed the story. We'd like to send out bright birthday wishes to Bella Kay of Maine, Hayden of Virginia, Morgan of Virginia, Landon of Virginia, Liv of Ohio, and Kai of New Hampshire. We'd like to thank our guest narrator, Viv, for catching us up, and also the sponsor of this episode, Bags by Betty, for fixing up Mr. Chris's Buffalo Bills jersey.
That's right, Miss Mel. Once upon a time, someone bought me a Drew Bledsoe Buffalo Bills jersey. For a long while, I've been wanting to change the name on the back to my own. Then along came Bags by Betty to save the day. Thanks, Betty.
You can check out a picture of Mr. Chris in his modified jersey over at the website nightlightstories.net.
And you can check out all of Betty's other fabulous works of stitchery at bit.ly/bagsbybetty. That's bit.ly/bagsbybetty.
She's like the Gandalf of sewing.
It's so true. She's like magical. It's amazing. She can do anything.
As always, we look forward to watching the glow grow brighter with the many stories we can share together.